So you can start your recording. Excellent. Good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. And it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's session entitled Piercing the Corporate Veil, Revealing the Ownership of Companies, Complying with the Amended Companies Act. Today's session, as I was sharing earlier, has attracted the largest turnout of participants since we started online sessions on March 19th. And I think it attests to the challenges persons are having with complying the new legislation. So let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you who are new to us here at the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. Many of you will know that the CCGI was incorporated as a non-for-profit or membership organization in 2012. I'm happy to remind you that we have no political or religious affiliation, nor are we controlled by any single external governmental, business, or commercial interest. Those of you who are familiar with us know that within the first week of Trinidad and Tobago having announced its the first of the COVID-19 restrictions by closing schools, CCGI went online. And since then, we have held weekly sessions, sometimes twice weekly, offering insights and advice from senior managers and directors as to how businesses can navigate this new environment. Even as we acknowledge that no one is an expert, since we are in uncharted waters along with the rest of the world. Taking a lead on advocacy for improved board performance during this COVID-19 crisis is in alignment with our purpose to help improve the corporate governance landscape in our region. Permit me to share also that given the financial challenges that many are facing with the temporary closure of non-essential businesses, we took a decision to offer a six-month moratorium on fees for members whose renewal is coming up in this period. We have also decided to extend this to new members who wish to join us in our quest to improve on corporate governance practices. Therefore, those of you who are not members can expect to receive an email from us in the coming days where we will make this offer to you to join us. One of the benefits, of course, includes the fact that some of our sessions, like this one, is offered free to our members. Today's session will focus on compliance with the new law where beneficial ownership of companies must be identified, which is an important part of the conformance function of the Board of Directors. Our presenter, Ms. Faye Lopez Collymore, is a longstanding director of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, and she has been championing this cause from inception. Following the passage of the law last year, she was instrumental in us hosting two breakfast sessions at the Hyatt Regency as we sought to bring awareness to companies on the implications of the act already becoming law. Faye is passionate in trying to unravel an issue that has proven very complex in being able to fulfill it. In that process, I will share that she has been liaising very closely with the company's registry, which has responsibility for executing this law. Faye is an attorney at law who served as the corporate secretary for Guardian Holdings for many years before she retired. She's also a lecturer of corporate governance at the Arthur Lockjack Global School of Business, and someone with a great desire to see an improvement in our corporate governance practices in our society. I know you will enjoy her presentation. I would just like to make a few housekeeping announcements before we go to Faye. We would like to remind everyone to remain on mute during Faye's presentation, which should last about 45 minutes. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions when she is finished. There's an icon at the bottom of your screen to those of you who are new to Zoom, where you can raise your hands to get our attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done in order to minimize disruptive noises. You may also make comments or ask questions in the chat feature, which may be read out towards the end of the session. As always, our technical support today is provided by Christy Johnsula Crouch from SmartLive Limited. Christy's services are outsourced, and we are very pleased with the very excellent support she provides. So those of you who are new to this online environment and would like to get support for meetings with Zoom, you can also contact Christy as we did and outsource that support service to her. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that the recording is made available on the CCGI website. Finally, our chairman is also here with us, Mr. Nigel Romano, and I would like to ask Nigel if he will make a few opening remarks and then pass on to Faye for her presentation this morning. Nigel?
Good morning. Thank you very much, Kamla, and welcome to all the attendees. I hope you will benefit from today from Faye's deep experience and knowledge. I mean, she is as Kamla said, she's very passionate, but more than that, she's also very qualified to talk on the subject. I know a lot of bigger, or in the experience I've had so far is with some of these big housing developments that have the owners as shareholders, and one of the challenges they are facing is getting people to fill out the forms and disclose whether they are as owners, if they own through a company, or if they own as individuals, whether they are in fact the beneficial owners. So it's something that I hope Faye will address today. But enough from me. Take it over to Faye and share your wisdom with us. Thank you very much.
Hi, good day, everybody. Very happy to be here. A little scared after all those wonderful introductions, so I hope I could do it justice. Let me pull up my screen here. Great. Sure. So everybody should be seeing the screen now. Yep. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so yes. I'm not so sure about my wisdom, but I'm here to share my experience with you in having tried to work through this app for a number of companies that I'm involved with. So without further ado, I will move on to the, let me get this going. Yep. First, it has to stop working as soon as you want it to. Okay. Try it different, advanced, right. So in the presentation today, I will cover a little bit about the purpose behind the changes, how the changes will impact very briefly the persons doing business with companies, as well as in more detail, the companies themselves, those who are registered shareholders and those who are beneficial owners. I look at how to comply and consider some different situations to do some examples of how we could see the companies complying. So what is the purpose behind the changes? What is our current, well, almost current status quo? I am a corporate lawyer, and I am passionate about corporate law, and I think that corporate vehicles have brought amazing economic development and benefits to our world for a few hundred years that they have been around. And now limited liability companies are the business vehicle of choice for most, if not all, businesses of any kind of critical mass. And over the few hundred years that it's been around, corporate law evolved to facilitate the ease of its, yes? Someone isn't hearing, or are we good, Christine?
It's fine.
Great.
Faye, go ahead.
Yeah. So over this time, corporate law evolved to facilitate the ease of establishment of companies as well as their continued existence, the administration. So up until 1997, we had fairly formal requirements. You pretty much had to speak with a lawyer to draft the documents to file in the company's registry, and you needed a lot of legal guidance on filing of these documents. 1997, we had what we then called the New Companies Act, which is probably a bit dated by now. Under that legislation, a lot of it was simplified, and it was even further simplified, I think, around 2013, so that today you can set up a company within a very short period of time, within a week or so, perhaps. And once a company is set up, there's some very limited filings. You file your return of registered office, and whenever that changes, you file a return of directors and changes to those directors. And these things don't really happen very often. You also file your return of secretary and assistant secretary. And then annually, you file your annual return. And all of these are fairly simple and straightforward documents. And no further filings are required unless you have some sort of corporate restructuring or some major event like amendment to your articles. So what is the purpose behind the changes? Well, unfortunately, the status quo had a bit of a dark side in that because it was so easy to set up companies, they were often set up without thinking very hard about them, without working through all the requirements, and then they were abandoned because they found that they weren't suitable for whatever the venture may have been, or maybe you set it up to buy a property and never bought the property, but the company just remained there. Corporate formalities were not completed. Sometimes you have shareholder companies that have no shareholders. Changes weren't really up to date. They weren't filed because for a very long time, the company's registry did not have the power or facility to apply the fines that they now apply so effectively. So you had a lot of companies that weren't properly maintained. There was, and unfortunately still is, no verification of filings and very little due diligence on companies when people were doing business with them. This led to abuses of the corporate form, as well as people actually setting up companies with some kind of fraudulent intent. So companies became vehicles for fraudulent activity, criminal activity, money laundering, tax evasion, corruption, and a lot of it was facilitated by poor corporate administration. When the Attorney General was piloting this legislation through to Parliament last year, one of the remarks he noted was that the company's registry had something like 104,000 companies within the register, of which 20,000 of them were in default, not up to date with filings. And that these companies were in fact used for illicit purposes. And he mentioned the $1 billion shipment of cocaine in orange juice cans, and pointed out that in that whole transaction, part of it was a defunct company on the register was used for the purpose of giving a name for the shipping information. So demonstrating how these companies and the failure to maintain these companies properly can lead to this kind of abuse and criminal activity. So one of the objectives was to get some of these companies off the register. And this is one of the ads that would have appeared. And I'm not even sure if in the paper you could read the names of these companies to show you some of the numbers that we had there. So what was the purpose behind these changes? What is a new order that we're looking for? And the main objective is transparency, that people can no longer hide behind the corporate veil. Technically, the purpose of the corporate veil is to separate the obligations and the interests of the company and its shareholders. But very often, the corporate veil was used to actually shield those who were actually in control of the company. So the intention here is for the true owners and controllers of companies to be fairly easily ascertained, so that persons doing business with the company know who's in control. This could make your company more attractive to contractors who are themselves subject to KYC requirements so that they need to know who they're dealing with. It could potentially improve corporate administration, and probably most significantly is to discourage the use of corporate vehicles for wrongdoing. Unfortunately, there is still a tendency locally not to do proper due diligence unless it's mandated, it's a compliance requirement that you have to tick that box. And the other potential difficulty in achieving the objectives is that the information will be put into the company's registry register, which is a public register, and it's accessible to the public. But whether it's easily accessible is probably questionable, because you have to pay not a lot of money, $20, but the whole process of paying in government offices could be quite complex in nature. But once you've made your payment and you have access online, it's very, very simple, and you can get a copy of the company's file and you'll have all the information. And that is a bit of the problem, because you'll have all the information. Last week I was involved in a webinar in which the TTEITI representative, Melanie Richards, gave us a presentation on the register, the voluntary register that they are developing for companies involved in the oil, gas, and mining operations in Trinidad and Tobago. And that, when you look at that register and how it works, it's very simple, it's very informative, it's very transparent. And if anybody's interested, we can provide the links. But that is a voluntary register limited to the entities within that industry. Unfortunately, wouldn't be achieving that with these filings at this current point. It potentially could be something that we'd see in the future, but it's still going to be a bit of a clunky exercise, as we will see as we go through this demonstration of how it works. So now I'll move on to describing what are the new obligations under the legislation. So under the legislation, you have some new obligations on the part of companies, and then you have new obligations on the part of the shareholders within those companies. So the obligations of the company, I've noted six of them here. The major obligation is to ascertain and obtain information as to all the beneficial owners having an interest in the company. And the company has a deadline until the 29th of May, 2020 to do this. And if they fail to take reasonable steps to do this, they are guilty of an offense. And I'll speak a little bit later about the penalties for that offense. The other requirement is once they obtain this information, they need to maintain a register of beneficial owners. Right now, companies are required to maintain a register of all their shareholders, and now that has to be supplemented to provide information on beneficial ownership. So these are the internal, if you want to call it that, obligations, and the evidence of the performance of those obligations will come in the filings that are required under the Act. So the company has to annually send out a Form 40 notice to all its shareholders on its register, requiring them to declare their status as owners, beneficial or non-beneficial. And whenever they get back a declaration from a shareholder, they're required to file a new Form 45. Whenever they issue a new share or they transfer a share, they're required to file a new Form 46. And then the annual return has been amended to include information on beneficial ownership. So these are the filings that the company would have to make. And for those of us involved in companies, you know, whenever you have a filing, there's a deadline. And if you fail to meet that deadline, you are subject to a fine of, I think it's $300 a month. And if you don't have all the information properly completed in the form, the company's registry may not, in fact, accept your form, and you could find yourself faced with these penalties. So most of us in the companies look at these filing requirements as being the important things to watch. With respect to the annual return, I should mention it also includes a provision with respect to bearer shares, which is the other matter that was dealt with under this legislation. But I'm not dealing with the matter of bearer shares. It's not a common issue for most companies. And most people, most companies and shareholders would be much more interested in how to discharge these obligations with respect to beneficial ownership. So what are the shareholder obligations? The shareholder obligations are contained in section 337C, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Essentially, shareholders have two obligations. One is to self-identify as to whether you are beneficial or non-beneficial. And then the other is to notify of any changes that occur in your beneficial ownership during the course of your time as a shareholder. These notifications have to be done using these forms, form 41, 42, 43, and 44, which we will talk about some more. And these forms are all statutory declarations, which have to be signed before commission of affidavits or notary public if you are abroad. And the what is the point of a statutory declaration? The reason a statutory declaration is used is because if you give an untrue declaration, you're guilty of a perjurious offense, which attracts fine and prison. The language in the language that is used in the forms in the act states, I make this solemn declaration conscientiously believing the same to be true and according to the provisions of the Statutory Declarations Act. But the fuller form of what we call the DRAX usually includes the information. And I am aware that if there's any statement in this declaration which is false in fact, which I know or believe to be false or do not believe to be true, I am liable to fine and imprisonment. So the intention here was to ensure that the person signing the form recognizes that they can be guilty of an offense if they give misleading or untrue information. A couple of points to note with the statutory declaration is that a company cannot swear to a declaration. A company doesn't have the mens rea, the mental capacity, because it's an artificial person, to swear to a declaration. So in the case of companies that have to swear to these declarations, they will have to nominate an individual, a director, the secretary, some other officer, to swear to the declaration. And the person swearing to the declaration will be personally responsible because they sign in their personal capacity making this oath. The other point that may come up is the question as regards joint holders of shares. Can you swear to a joint declaration or do you have to swear to separate declarations? And from my research, it suggests to me that either is fine. You can do a joint declaration or you can do separate ones. But if you do a joint one, you just need to be careful in how it's drafted to ensure it correctly covers the information that's required. So that's pretty much the situation with respect to the statutory declaration forms. And all of this relates to the question of beneficial ownership. So what do we look at for beneficial ownership? When we look at this legislation, we talk a lot about the beneficial ownership of companies, but the legislation starts from the bottom up. And what it does is it requires every single company to require its shareholders to declare their beneficial ownership. So it starts by looking at the beneficial ownership of the share before you get into the question of the beneficial ownership of the company. So I imagine the expectation is that once you can look at a company and see all the beneficial owners of its shares, you can then assess who is actually the beneficial owner of the company. And the beneficial owner, for the most part, you're looking for a natural person. But the Act acknowledges that there are some legal entities that should be considered natural persons for the purpose of the legislation. And these are the corporation sole. So in the case of a state corporation, this corporation sole would be the beneficial owner. Corporate bodies established under other written law. And this would seem to me to include external companies or non-TT companies which are registered under the laws of their jurisdiction. And the reason for this exclusion is likely that in those jurisdictions, those companies are also subject to this kind of law where they have to declare their beneficial owners and their registers would be available for inspection. Because this is not a unique piece of legislation to Trinidad and Tobago. It's pretty much a global piece of legislation that has been rolling out over countries since, I think, about 2016. So that's why you probably have that exception there. An international organization where members include two or more countries or their government would be considered a natural person. And although it's not specified here, when you look at the legislation, public listed companies would be considered natural persons. So once the ownership is in one of these entities, they would be considered the beneficial owner. So let's move away from those legal entities and look at the natural person. So if the shareholder is a natural person, that shareholder can either be the full beneficial owner or a non-beneficial owner. The beneficial owner is essentially the person who is entitled to all the benefits and economic control of the share. And for the most part, most of us as shareholders are probably beneficial owners. So it's in a fair, probably fairly limited situations in which the registered shareholder is non-beneficial as a natural person and holds for some other natural person, beneficial owner, or some other entity. But what is important to note is that if the registered shareholder is not a natural person, you then have to look at the definition to determine who is the natural person who has to be identified as the beneficial owner. So we had the exceptions we spoke about earlier, the corporation, sole, etc. But if the owner of the share is a company that is not a public company or a state-controlled company or an external company, then you have to look more closely at the definition in the Act to identify who is the beneficial owner of that company to be identified as the beneficial owner of the share. A point to note when you look at this legislation is that beneficial owner means both the beneficial owner who is registered on the register as well as the beneficial owner who is not registered on the register. So the obligations, for the most part, are the same, although there are a few little differences. So when you have a corporate shareholder, you are essentially looking for the person who owns or controls that corporate shareholder. And you have three aspects to look at. You start by looking for the person who ultimately owns or controls the company. And if there is no such natural person, you then look for the natural person who exercises control of the legal person or arrangement through other means. If you still can't find a natural person, you then look at the natural person who holds the position of senior managing officer. And I'm going to look at a few examples of corporations, so I'm not going to get into the definition in too much detail now. I'm just putting it up there to show how it works. You also then would need to look at the question of control, which again is defined in the Companies Act, and essentially looks at the natural person who can ensure that the business and affairs of the company are conducted in accordance with their wishes. And this could either be through the holding of ownership of shares, the exercise of voting power, or by perhaps some other kind of agreement or document that's not provided for in the share. But once you can have that influence over the company, you would be considered the person in control. The penalties and exemptions, we can't have a presentation without mentioning these. The penalties for breach are pretty universal for shareholders and companies, as well as directors and officers of companies. And the penalty, if you fail to file your form as a company or submit your declaration as a shareholder, you're liable on summary conviction to a fine of $10,000 and 3 years in prison, plus $300 a day, so long as the offense continues. Directors and officers, if they're complicit, if you knowingly or recklessly fail to file Form 45 or in default as regards the filing of Form 46, you're equally liable and subject to the same penalty. There are some defenses or get out of jail cards. In the case of the company failing to establish beneficial ownership, if the company can demonstrate that they've taken reasonable steps to do this, then they are excused from the requirement. The company can also rely on declarations submitted by the shareholders once they have no reason to believe that they are misleading. And then the shareholder or beneficial owner who fails to submit their declaration, if they are in fact charged with this offense, they can, if possible, show reasonable cause. They should demonstrate why they weren't filing this declaration. And if it's found by the court to be reasonable cause, they could be excused from the offense. The Act, in terms of exemptions, does not apply to public companies, and this is very specifically provided for. And by implication, external companies are also not covered because when you look at the definition of company, it refers to a body corporate incorporated under that our Companies Act and not another Companies Act. So that in a nutshell is the note of the penalties and exemptions. This is just a copy of the specific section dealing with the company's obligation, because the company has to, some people have asked me, well, if you know who the shareholders are, do you need to do this all the time? But there is a requirement for the company to annually issue the prescribed form. And within 12 months, obtaining this information and filing the Form 45 in the company's registry. So if you fail to do these filings, then you can find yourself in breach of the act. So the forms themselves, we have 7 new forms and a revised annual return. Form 40 is, the forms that are circled or outlined in red are the forms that are relevant to the company, that the company issues the Form 40 and then files the other forms. Those outlined in blue are the forms required for the non-beneficial owner, and those outlined in green are the forms required for the beneficial owner. I've heard a question asked about to what extent can we change these forms. All the company forms have to be in what is referred to as the prescribed form, which means you can't change them. But you can often include schedules, because when you look at the forms, it's almost impossible to include all the information on the form itself. So you can always attach schedules. The declarations made by shareholders are required to be in the form approved by the registrar. And the fact that forms have been issued by the registry suggests these are the forms that are approved. And the forms themselves include a note providing for some modification and adaptation to the circumstances. So for the declarations, you could probably make some changes to properly describe the situation, but the company forms would have to be in the form specified in the regulation. Okay, so now we get into a slightly more active part where we look at some of the obligations or the obligations that are created under the Act. So there's an initial obligation which we have all either complied with or failed to comply with by now or close to failing. The initial obligation, well, before I get into it, I just want to just note for the schematic that this is how I refer to the shareholders. So either you are a beneficial owner who is a registered shareholder, or you are a non-beneficial owner. And if you are a non-beneficial owner, there will always be a beneficial owner who is not registered behind the non-beneficial owner. So looking at this chart, these are the initial obligations, and you will see that the non-beneficial owner, beneficial owner, non-registered, and the registered beneficial owner are treated slightly differently for the purposes of the legislation. My personal view is that this is probably an oversight, but it does create a little bit of a slightly different situation for each of them. So in the case of the non-beneficial owner, that person should have submitted their declaration to the company since the 28th of June 2019. And if they fail to do so, their fine has been clocking up at $300, what was it, a day? That offense continues. But hopefully they can all provide reasonable cause as to why they didn't do that. So the other situation is where a shareholder who is not registered acquired their beneficial ownership after the Act came into force. They have to self-declare as soon as they acquire that beneficial ownership. But the person who was a beneficial owner before the Act came into force, they actually do not have an obligation until the company sends them a Form 40. And it's only when they get the Form 40 from the company that their obligation kicks in. So what is the obligation? The obligation is that as I pointed out here, the beneficial owner who is not registered who became a beneficial owner after the 29th of May 2019, or the non-beneficial owner, both had to send these declarations into the company. And then when the company received the declaration, they had 30 days to file their Form 45 in the company's registry. And if they had sent a Form 40 and received the Form 42 from the beneficial owner, they would then also have to file a Form 45 in the company's registry. So that is pretty much the initial flow that should have taken place by now, or in the process of taking place. But more importantly is the annual flow to which we would be subject on an annual basis going forward. And as I said, the Act provides that annually we have to issue this notice. And when we receive these declarations back from the shareholder, we have to file these forms. And we have to continuously be aware, obtain information on those who have beneficial interests in the company. So this is what the flow looks like, which may look rather complicated, but I will walk through it. And again, I'm using the same beneficial owner who is not registered, or the non-beneficial owner with the beneficial owner behind them. So it starts off with the company having to, by the 29th of May, send this Form 40 to all its registered shareholders. So the company would not necessarily have information about the beneficial owner who's not registered. So they're really sending this form to the persons who are on their register. And in the case of a non-beneficial owner, it's really the responsibility of that non-beneficial owner to identify and pass on the information to the beneficial owner so that they can submit the declarations that they're required to submit, which is step two, because in step two, all these shareholders, beneficial and non-beneficial, have to send their declarations back to the company within 30 days. And then when the company receives those declarations, they have to put that information in a Form 45 and file it in the company's registry. And depending on how it receives those declarations, they may actually have to file that Form 45 several times. I understand from the company's registry that anything that you collect within 30 days can be amalgamated in one form. But once you have, once the period of time between forms is more than 30 days, you will have to file separate forms. So that is fairly simple, even though it looks a bit complex. And then we could look at the question of what happens when you have share transfers, because this is something that in the rush to try and comply with the new obligations of self-identifying, we perhaps overlooked that you also have to deal with changes in the register that come take place by way of transfers or new share issues. So now, before the Act, when you did a share transfer, you would generally just have the transferee send into the company the share transfer form and the old share certificate for the company to register the transfer. Once the company registered the transfer, they would then enter the information in the register and it would be included in the next annual return. Now, depending on the timing of the annual return, it could take up until 13 months from the date of that transfer taking effect before that information actually gets into the public registry, because the annual return is filed as at a particular date. And if you register the transfer the following day, then it doesn't come in until the following year's annual return. The new requirement appears very simple in that once the company registers a share transfer, they then have to file Form 46 within 30 days after the share transfer. The tricky part here is that in that Form 46, the company has to include information with respect to beneficial ownership and nationality, which is information it may not necessarily have. Once the change takes effect, you also have these new provisions kicking in, where the transferor has to notify the company of the change by way of submitting these declarations. And then the transferee, and you see I have some question marks here. So there's some question as to what exactly the transferee has to do. Because if you go back to those sections I was looking at before, where non-beneficial owner identified when the act came into force, and if you became a beneficial owner after the act but you weren't registered, then you self-identified, and then the beneficial owner who was a beneficial owner before the act came into force would identify when the company sent them a form. So depending on your status, there may be some doubt as to whether you needed to file a form to self-identify. The other point is that the Act provides for any change, you have to file the Form 43, or you have to submit the Form 43 or 44 declaration to the company. And does an acquisition constitute a change? But then when you look at the forms themselves, you see that Forms 43 and 44 are clearly designed for disposal of shares and not for acquisition of shares. So my understanding is that the intention would be clear to me that the persons acquiring also have that obligation to self-identify and should be submitting those declarations to the company. And even if they don't do so, the company should send them a Form 40 so that they can then send a declaration in response, and the company can then rely on the declaration to complete its Form 46 filing, so they will be sure it has that information. The other point to note with this cycle is the 30 days would expire at the same time, and whereas the company could potentially receive this information from the shareholders on the day on which it's supposed to file, it could find itself facing the fines because it cannot put together this information and complete this form until the following day, and therefore find itself in next month. So when you deal with a share transfer, it's these are just the provisions of the obligations. It's important that the company may want to try and make sure it gets all this information in advance of effecting the share transfers so that it can file its forms without problem. And it may also want to send a Form 40 to anyone who hasn't provided them with a declaration so that it may ensure, it may rely on that information in updating its register. The other transaction you need to look at is where you issue shares, because again, you had a very simple process when a company issued shares. It would issue to whoever was on its register, going to be on its register, whether it was a non-beneficial or the beneficial owner, and it would then include that information in the annual return. And you had the same issue with the how up to date the information in the annual return would be, because you had until possibly 13 months until the next annual return was due. So what was what is the new requirement? Once you issue the shares, you have 30 days to file in the company's registry. Then you have similar situation arising where once the person becomes a shareholder, the question of them having to self-identify or identify about changes to the company within the 30 days, and really the company wanting to get that information in advance so that it can be sure that it can file the forms. So hopefully those flowcharts are a little helpful in describing those obligations that the company has in dealing with this requirement. The next little section I'm going to go on to is where you trace corporate control, because this is where some of the complexity comes in when you look at the new legislation. So for the purpose of looking at this, I am looking at a company here, which I've unimaginatively referred to as the company. And this company has 7 shareholders, and 6 of them are human beings, but one of them is a corporate shareholder. For the most part, we can expect these human beings are probably full beneficial owners, although you may have one or two nominees inside of there. But because you have a company, that company cannot be the beneficial owner of its share because it's a corporate entity. So that company needs to look at its own shareholders. So in this case, this company has 2 shareholders, one holds 40%, one holds 60%. Neither of them owns the company 100%. So you would look at who is controlling by way of voting power. And without, unless there's some special agreement or something in place, you will see that the person holding 60% is the controller of that company and would therefore be the beneficial owner of the share that CS1 holds in the company. But what if HB7 was not HB7, but was another company, CS2, holding the 60%? In that case, CS2 would have to look at its own shareholders to identify who is the controlling shareholder. So in this case, CS2 has four shareholders, three hold 10%, one holds 70%, and on the same premise of the holder of shares controlling the company, we would say, well, okay, in this case, HB7 seems to be the controller of the share held by CS1 in the company, because you have to trace the control of this company right back up until the ultimate human being that controls that share. So what happens if HB7 is not HB7, but CS3, another corporate shareholder? So you repeat the process, and you repeat it as many times as you need to, as long as you have corporate entities within the chain of ownership. And suppose in this case, you had one of those corporations where nobody really had majority control or could be considered the controller. And then you go back to the definition where you had these three levels, and you'll see that in such a case, you then have to look for the person who holds that position of senior managing officer. So in this case, that is the person that will be identified as a beneficial owner of this company. And when you look at these chains of control, we need to also remember that each company in this chain would be responsible for going through this exercise. So CS1 would have to issue a Form 40 to its shareholders. CS2 would have to issue a Form 40 to all its shareholders. Each of those shareholders will have to respond. So you would have a whole layering of this obligation across all those companies. So if you're in a group of companies, you probably have quite a lot of paperwork to do proving that you are complying with this legislation. So having looked at that, I will just now move into the final piece where I would look at how this plays out in some different types of companies. And for this purpose, I have looked at these types: a public company, a one-man natural person company, a family company or a small company with a few shareholders who pretty much know each other, a company that owns shares in a private company, condominium townhouse company, like one of the ones that Nigel was referring to, a subsidiary in a group of public, in a public company group, and a state corporation. And hopefully when you look at these different types of companies, you will see that you just can pull out pieces and shift them around to meet the requirements of the particular corporate situation structure that you're looking at. So a public company, remember, the public company is exempt. So the public company actually doesn't have to issue the Form 40. It doesn't have to respond to a Form 40 that it receives. It doesn't have to file any information with respect to beneficial ownership. And the reasoning behind this exemption is that public companies would be subject to filing requirements under securities legislation requiring disclosure of beneficial ownership of controllers of that company. It should also be noted that the definition of beneficial owner indicates that once the ownership is in a public company, that public company would be considered the beneficial owner and so treated as a natural person for that purpose. So here we have, I'm looking at that last chart that I put up the last time, and we look at CS3 here. And in this case, CS3 actually is a public company. So it has some shareholders, and 40% of its shares are held by the public and is listed on the stock exchange. In such case, that public listed company would be the beneficial owner and your chain would stop there. And that public company would be the beneficial owner of CS3, of CS2, of CS1, and of the share that CS1 holds in the company. I just point out here that the way public companies are defined in the legislation, they are defined slightly differently in two different places, and potentially they could have a different effect. But for the most part, when I speak about a public company here, I am assuming that companies that are listed on any stock exchange would meet the definition, both for the purpose of the exemption, as well as being identified as the beneficial owner. But it is something to note if you have corporations that have a public company aspect. So if we look at the one-man natural person company, you have perhaps one shareholder. I have a company like that. I am the only shareholder. I control all the shares. So what are my obligations? As a company, I have to annually give myself a Form 40 requiring me to declare my ownership. And as a shareholder, I have to swear to an affidavit, a statutory declaration, and give it back to myself as the company. And then the company has to file the Form 45. And the company will maintain a beneficial ownership register and include this information in the annual return. The only time we'll have additional requirements would be when shares are issued or if shares are transferred. So if you look, this is the chart I had originally of the annual obligation, which looks a little complicated, but because it's just one person who is the full beneficial owner, it's a lot less complicated. So you have to go through this process pretty much every year. So what happens if you have a few shareholders in the company, or it's like a family business? And pretty much the situation is the same, except you have more shareholders. So your chart will look, this is one shareholder, but for each shareholder, you just add on one of those little mini charts, and it's pretty much the same. So if you have more shareholders. So what happens where you have a company that owns shares in a private company? How do you deal with that situation? Important to remember here that both those companies are subject to the Act and have the obligations under the Act. And of course, the company that is the shareholder is not a natural person and has to self-declare as a non-beneficial owner and identify who is the beneficial owner. So again, this is a chart showing the obligations of the annual flow. What happens when you have a corporate shareholder? So in this case, you have a company that has one corporate shareholder. That corporate shareholder is a non-beneficial owner. So that non-beneficial owner has to contact the beneficial owner, who has to file the Form 42, non-beneficial form files the Form 41, and the company files their Form 45. So let's say this is my share that I own in a condo company through a company called PPL. So the beneficial owner here, I am the beneficial owner. PPL is a registered shareholder in condo company. So when condo company sends PPL the form, PPL will send back a Form 41, will identify me as the beneficial owner. I will submit a Form 42, and then condo company has 45 days within which to file that form. But we can't forget that I'm also the owner of PPL. PPL has to send me a Form 40. I have to send it back a Form 42, and PPL has to submit the Form 45 to the company's registry. So you have two separate little cycles going on here, and you have a separate cycle for each company involved in the chain. So what happens when you have a condominium townhouse company with many unrelated shareholders? You basically take those charts and you lay them one on top of the other, and you probably get something quite complicated because you have so many different shareholders. But again, if you break it down into the pieces, it's not as complicated as all that. So you have all your different owners, you take the same chart and you layer it on with respect to your beneficial owners and your non-beneficial owners in the same way as we did for those charts that we looked at just now. The other situation that may arise is a case where you have shares held in trust or some other arrangement, and the definition section in the Act identifies who has to be identified as the beneficial owner. And it lists the settlor, trustee, protector, beneficiaries, class of beneficiaries, and any other natural person exercising ultimate effective control over the trust. And the answer, if you ask, does it have to be all of these or any of these? The answer is yes. All of them have to be identified as the beneficial owner, which could probably create some very ugly administrative requirements for any complex trusts. So I'm glad I'm not involved in any of those. If you have a deceased shareholder, generally, the person who is holding the grant of administration or probate would be recognized as the beneficial owner until such time as the estate is administered. And until the estate is administered, I understand from the company's registry that they will accept a notation of estate of for the identifying who is the owner of the share. Subsidiaries in a group of companies under a public company. Best explained through using a chart. So in this chart, we have a group holding company with a lot of companies underneath it. And the way it works is that each of those companies has to send their Form 40 declaration to the shareholders on the register, which may just be the holding company. Each of those companies then has to give back a Form 41 because as companies, they are not beneficial owners. And they would identify the group holding company as the beneficial owner. Technically, the group holding company does not need to send any form to the company. So once Form 41 identifies the group holding company as the beneficial owner, the requirements end there. And of course, each of these companies then have to file their Form 46 in the company's registry. In the case of a state corporation, for a single company that's owned by the state is identified as the beneficial owner. If you have a group, you have the same situation as with a public company situation, except that so you have your Form 40 is going up the chain, your Form 41 is coming down, and the state corporation does have to self-identify as a beneficial owner because they are not exempt from that requirement. Right, and that concludes my presentation, which I hope was helpful and informative, and I'm now happy to try my best to answer some questions.
Thank you very much, Faye. That was excellent, and I hope everybody on the call agrees with me. I just have one question for you, and then I have to drop off because I have another meeting. Sure. The question is, you indicated that there was some ambiguity in the case of filing some of the forms and that kind of stuff. Is anybody working with the registry to sort that out and to get clarity so that people who have to file will have some certainty with respect to that? And that's all for me, and I have to drop off. But go ahead.
Sure.
I'll just wait for the reply, and then we'll open it up, and Kamla will take over.
Yes. Well, I think when you look at the Form 40 that the company registry has produced, that Form 40 indicates to all shareholders that they are required to file these declarations. So it does seem the expectation is that all shareholders should submit these declarations to the company. But more importantly, the company needs to have this information when they file their forms. So for the company to get the information, they need to get these declarations submitted by their shareholders. Mm-hmm. So from a practical perspective, I would say that you want everybody to submit these declarations.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Take care. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Right. Thank you so much, Nigel. And I agree with Nigel Faye. That was really such an excellent presentation of what, for many of us, is a very complex issue. Okay. Having said that, let me just also add to all of our participants who are on today, truly, this was such an excellent session. Those of you who need to claim CPDs, this is an excellent session for which you can claim CPDs for having attended and your learnings, right? And actually, it also applies to all of our sessions because corporate governance is part of what your continuing education needs to include. Yes. So just to remind everyone that that is available. So let's see, there were a number of questions, and thank you to those of you who were trying to treat with the questions before. The final question that just came on was, will I be able to get a copy of the slides?
Sophia? That's an easy one. Yeah, sure.
Right. Okay, good. So we will forward a copy of the slides along with the link to the video presentation. Letitia, see your hand up. You have a question?
Hi, good afternoon, yes. Hi, Faye.
Hi.
If we could just go back to the demonstration based on the holding company.
Okay. Yeah, my touch.
So based on what you would have said, the subsidiary companies will obviously name the holding company as their beneficial person.
Yes.
We go further and also identify a natural person within that publicly listed company, or does it stop there?
Okay, state corporation. Let me just go back up. It should stop at the group holding company, because if you look at the definition of ultimate beneficial owner, it says the controller, etc., except a company listed on a public stock exchange. So once it, certainly under our piece of legislation, once the ultimate ownership is in a public listed company, you can stop there. You don't need to go beyond that and identify any natural person.
Okay, I asked because there seems to be a bit of confusion when filing at the registry. Some clerks are taking it as is, and some are asking you to still insert a natural person, even though it's a publicly listed company. So I believe they are still going through a transition, and they are still revising forms and requirements as they go along.
I believe so, because I've heard in other situations that quite a lot of conflicting advice is given. And my recommendation to you would be to write to someone in the registry. Last time we gave one of these presentations, one of the legal officers gave us her email and said that we could always send queries to her. And I have sent queries and have gotten fairly substantive responses. And once you walk with the response when you're filing, you shouldn't have any difficulty.
Okay, just to add, there was another question, Faye, if you can address. It says, and this is from Keithan Jones Graves, if the company's filing anniversary is in October, do we have to file it before May 2020 or in October 2020 using the new format as prescribed under the Amended Companies Act? And she says, notes that they filed in October of 2019, but not with the new amendment.
Well, I think last year, the forms themselves didn't come out until sometime in September. And for the most part, the company's registry was accepting, in many cases, the old form of annual return. So technically, by the 29th of May, you would be expected to have all this information on beneficial ownership and should be filing the new return. But I don't know if they still accept the old one. I think they will expect the new one, but they have been accepting notations on the forms indicating that the information on beneficial ownership is still being secured.
Okay.
But the question is whether you use the old form or the new form. I'm a little unclear as to exactly.
No, I think the question is, having already filed in October, and October being the anniversary date, mm-hmm. Do we need to file before the end of May 2020, which is the deadline that the company's registry has given, or do you wait on your anniversary date? And this is with respect to the beneficial ownership forms.
Okay, well, I would say it really depends. If I go back to that annual obligation, let me just find the annual obligation. Right. So I would say the expectation of the registry is that by the 29th of May, companies would have issued their forms to get back this information. So their expectation is by the 28th of June, they should be getting a number of Form 45s filed by all the companies in the registry. So this is the first obligation. The annual period, I think, would run from the 29th of May 2019 to the 29th of May 2020. That's the first year of the annual obligation. So if you filed your annual return in October containing the beneficial ownership information, I think you still need to send this Form 40 within the first year of the Act and then file your Form 45. It's a lot of filing, but out of an abundance of caution, you'd want to do the filings. Or clarity from the registry itself if you have any doubts as to whether or not you think you should be filing.
Okay, so there are two questions on this exact point, so I'll raise it to you first, and there's another one that it's a little more involved. The first question from two persons, Mr. Roland Bertrand and also from Maxine, is whether, given the current pandemic, if the registry has extended that May 29, 2020 deadline.
That deadline hasn't been extended. There has been an extension to the 31st of July of all filing requirements. So the levying of the fee, the penalty of $300 a month won't apply. You have until the 31st of July for filing of forms. But that doesn't cover the May 29th extension, period, deadline. And and it doesn't cover the 28th of June 2019 either, because those are not filing obligations. Those are different types of obligations.
Okay, so we could come back to that if anyone needs clarification again. But a question from Shivani Jagannath. She said, excellent presentation. My question is, what if a company does not receive all the shareholder declarations by May 2020? How does the company file a Form 45 for those shares for which a declaration has not been received?
Okay, so in that case, I would suggest that you communicate with the company's registry for some direction. But I was speaking with a colleague of mine who has a situation where they have a private company with quite a couple hundred shareholders. And of course, they have that situation. And the direction they have is that you want to be able to demonstrate that you have made reasonable efforts to contact these persons. So maybe you have sent a letter, a couple of mailing, depending on whether you have information with respect to emails, because not everybody would have that information. So you may have a couple of mailings either by email or by regular post. If you have a phone number, you try some telephone contact information to follow up with the persons. And if all that fails, the company's registry does appear to expect that you would put an ad in papers requiring those persons to self-identify and submit their declarations. And I imagine once you've done all that, you probably have to provide some evidence that you have done so, and the company's registry may accept the notation with respect those shareholders. But in such a case, I would definitely approach the registry for some guidance.
Okay, great. So there's another question from Christian Brooks, and he asks, if a company has not issued any shares to date, it appears that they will have to in moving forward, is there a minimum number of shareholders? Hope that question is clear. If it's not, Christian, if you are on and you want to clarify the question, please, that would help. So the question basically, if a company has not issued any shares to date, but it is looking to move forward, is there any minimum number of shareholders? And is it at this point that you declare the beneficial ownership?
Well, if the company has no shareholders, my view is that when you look at the interpretation or the definition of shareholder, whoever is the incorporator would have to identify themselves as the beneficial owner. But it is an interesting question because within the last few days, this legislation was passed, Act Number 10 of 2020, one of those lovely acts that amend a whole range of pieces of legislation, including the Companies Act. And what that amendment does is that once a company is registered, it must issue one or more shares within 14 days. And for companies that are in existence and don't have shares issued, they have to do that within 6 months, or the minister has the power to extend that time. And once shares are issued, the company must file a notice in the company's registry within 14 days. So these are the new timelines that would apply once this piece of legislation is proclaimed. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay the minimum number of shareholders. One is the minimum. You don't need to have more than one shareholder, but you would have to have at least one.
Okay. All right, great. I think you had addressed this in the presentation, but just by chance, there's a question, which is, what is the procedure for self-identifying?
The self-identifying is through using the Form 42 or the Form 41. So if you are a beneficial owner, you would use Form 40 declaration and Form 42. And if you are a non-beneficial, you would use Form 41 and get your beneficial owner to submit Form 42.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. I think there was, we have a contribution from Karen, which I appreciate. She said, the forms can be confusing. The registry is trying to help with issuing instructions, and there is an instruction for the Form 45 on the company's website. So thank you for that, Karen. Mm-hmm. Let me see, was there... I don't think I'm seeing another question, but I want to thank Natasha, who advised that the deadline to July 31st, which you spoke of, is based on Act 4 of 2020, which is the Miscellaneous Provisions Act for all filings.
There was actually a legal notice filed before then as well, given that period. I don't have that one offhand.
Okay.
But is it a question or clarification? Sorry.
I think she just... pointed that out for information sharing. Okay, are there any other questions? Because those are the ones that I'm seeing so far. Forgive me if anybody had their hands up because I actually was on the chat. Are there any other questions from anyone? Any comments either?
So I don't know if the question referred to whether it covered all the obligations under the Act, but filings are quite distinct from submitting a declaration to the company. So the only exemption is really for the company filings. It doesn't extend to the declarations that need to be submitted. I don't know if that was clarification I was being sought, but I should mention that in
okay.
particular.
All right.
But
so
again,
we have...
the company is the one that's subject to these fines. So it's the shareholders are less exposed from that perspective.
Yeah. All right. So we have a question from Christian Brooks again, which is there a minimum number of shares which can be issued? And let me just also add that Jared Cooper had his hand up. So if Jared still has a question, we can take it from him and then we can answer this question from Christian. Jared, did you have a question?
Oh, hi. Yes. I'm involved with filing for my company, so which is the simplest form where the shareholders are individuals. Can the presenter just walk through the necessary forms for that process just one more time? I know she put up a slide with it.
Okay. So, yes. While you do that, Faye, while you're looking, Faye, do you also want to answer this question from Christian Books? Is there a minimum number of shares which can be issued?
Again, the minimum would just be one. You don't really need to issue more than one share. Okay, so let me find the... Right, so this is the one man person company. Let me make sure it's sharing. Okay, so this was the question relating to how that works. So I don't know what is the, if there is a specific question.
I think he wanted you to just kind of explain the process again through the first few steps there for the one man company.
Right, so the company would send this Form 40 to the shareholder on record, and then the shareholder, being the beneficial owner who is registered, then has to submit a Form 42 declaration. So they'd have to fill this out and go to a commissioner of affidavits to swear to it, and then send it into the company. And the company would then complete Form 45 and submit Form 45 to the registry. Within 30 days. Is there any specific aspect of it he wanted clarity on?
Jared, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Okay, excellent. And remember, we will be sharing the recording with everyone. So you guys can always go through it again and see where, if you need clarity, because truly it appears to be such a complex issue. This is the third time I have been hearing the presentation with respect to the steps to be followed in identifying your beneficial owner, and then how do you file that to the registry. And I still find that there are areas that are a bit gray. So, you know, I think Faye did a really excellent job in trying to break this down, especially in developing those flowcharts to allow us to be able to have a better understanding. But yes, it may require going through it more than once again on the video as well. So do we have any other questions? And while we wait to hear, Christy, I'm on the chat. So if it is anyone has their hand up, please just let me know. I want to share the all the congratulations we have from Nadine. Nadine Durity saying, excellent presentation. Thank you, Faye. Christian Brooks as well, excellent presentation. Very helpful in grasping these new updates. So thank you. Yes, Karen agreed. The flowcharts are excellent. Also, we had from P. Moreau.
Is there Shavini Jagannath with her?
Yes, Shavini has up her hand.
Okay, Shavini. Yes, let's hear from her. Shivani, you can raise your question now, please. You just need to unmute your mic.
Okay, yes. Are you hearing me?
Yes, we hear you.
All right. So my question is, when the company is filing the Form 45, when it receives a declaration from a shareholder, does the company has to file all the shareholders' information at once, or as soon as it receives a declaration, only that information to put on the Form 45?
No, when you look at the Form 45, you could include information from more than one shareholder, and you have 30 days to file. So whatever you collect within that 30 days, you can amalgamate in the one form and then submit that form to the registry. You don't have to submit for each declaration you receive separately.
Okay, but if it's not within the 30 days, then you would have
to... If it's not, yeah, the company's registry probably send it back and have you file two forms for the separate shareholder.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, excellent. Let's just see, we have on the chat again. So I really can't identify who this person is, but their comment is that they've agreed, very thorough and excellent presentation. Looking forward to receiving the PowerPoint and to reviewing the recording in due course. Also, let me share that the recording takes several hours to download off of Zoom. So, oh, thank you, Pastora, right. So you will more than likely get your link to the recording tomorrow, okay? Angela, the lawyer sharing to you, Faye, the flowcharts were excellent. Ashley, too, is sharing, very comprehensive presentation. The flowcharts help make this process clearer. So thanks, Faye. Right, we have a question from Maxine. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
Afternoon.
Hi. So my question relates to the ultimate beneficial owner when it's one of those companies that are exempted, for instance, the corporation sole.
Right.
What do you put on the actual form? Do you simply put corporation sole, or is there not applicable?
No, I think you would put corporation sole because they would be identified as the beneficial owner.
Okay, you just up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, if you have any doubts, you can always write to the registry and get their response. But I would think because it's identified as a deemed a natural person, you can identify the corporation sole as a beneficial owner.
Thank you very much. Understood.
Sure.
Okay, apologies for that noise just now. Okay, so do we have any other questions or comments? We do have a few more minutes, but if there aren't any other questions or so, let me, on behalf of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, really thank everyone for their participation today. You know, we were thrilled. There were 72 persons on this session today, and that is really excellent. We are happy that we are able to help fill this void and assisting companies and understanding what their obligations are. I want to remind everyone, corporate governance is important. Good corporate governance is excellent. It serves to benefit all of us, all organizations, and the society at large. And so we really need to work together to see how we can help improve on our corporate governance practices. So we invite you to also join with us. The Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute is a membership organization. So do join us as we seek to improve and advocate for improvement in our corporate governance practices in the region. Faye, you know, I want to thank you so much. I know that you did a lot of work in preparing these slides, and it really shows that you had an excellent grasp of the complexity and how to break it down. So it justifies to, you know, your experience as a lecturer at the Lockjack School. So thank you so much on behalf of all the participants for bringing the clarity that you did today to this issue. So having noted that there is a possible extension to July, although remember, as Faye said, the May 29 deadline is to ensure that you have sent out your forms to the beneficial owners, okay, to begin to collect your data. So we would look at possibly having a follow-up session again, possibly in another month or so, as we understand more or there is, you know, any greater clarity that we can bring. But if you have any questions as well, feel free to reach out to us via email. Christy, Faye, or myself will be able to respond to you. So thank you all very much for a really tremendous session today. I have learned a lot, Faye, and I am gratified, all of our participants, that you guys came on and stayed with us, and you know that we feel that we really contributed some good to you all. All right, so everyone have a wonderful day. Enjoy your lunch now. Okay. Oh, and our session next week, Wednesday, we will retain this 11 o'clock start time. Our session will be presented by Sophia Noel, and she would be looking at leadership, particularly dealing with difficult boards and really managing in this COVID-19 environment. So join us. You should see that flyer out by tomorrow. Join us. It would be free again to our members. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.